not Sunday morning's Bible class lesson. Sunday morning's sermon. And some of y'all not remember what that was about. I know it's been a few nights since then. It was about confessing sins. So I wanted to bring up something that Steve brought up in the class. And just 1 Corinthians 5. If you want to turn to that. Of course, this was Paul's first letter to the Corinthians. They had some that were being sexually immoral. And we'll be looking at verse 1 through 8. And not all of that, just verses 6 through 8 is what I want to bring up. Most important, because what we're about to study tonight makes this passage mean so much more. And that's really the importance of going back and studying the Old Testament, is it can bring so much more meaning to what you have read and understand in the New Testament. So let's look at verses 6 through 8. Right quickly, 1 Corinthians 5. It says, "Your glorying is not good. Do you not know that a little leaven leavens the whole lump? Therefore, purge out the old leaven, that you may be a new lump, since you truly are unleavened. For indeed Christ, our Passover, was sacrificed for us. Therefore, let us keep the feast, not with old leaven, or with the leaven of malice and wickedness, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth." Now, if you hadn't gone back and studied Exodus there before, and didn't have a Jewish background, you started reading this in the New Testament scripture, you might wonder what in the world Paul's talking about. But with most everybody in here studied Exodus several times in their life, and this is an easy passage to understand for us. But if you haven't, the lessons we get out of Exodus really help in understanding some New Testament passages. So. And we'll see, of course, the leaven here is talking about the sin that was the sexual immorality that was in the church of Corinth. And we'll see, as we go through tonight's lesson, a little bit more, a refresher memory on leavening, the Passover and all that Paul brings out in 1 Corinthians chapter 5. So I thought that was pretty good. Now, as far as a review, this is an interactive class, by the way, so I want your input. I got a list of people that we'll go through. And somebody volunteer while I got Joseph up there. Anybody? What about him in Exodus that we need to remember? A lot in Genesis, but what about Exodus? Is he alive? No. Where is he? Is he buried? No. The bones are going to be carried back to the lands of Canaan, so what is he now? He's embalmed. He's a cadaver, probably in a sarcophagus. So that's something to think about when we get to, I think the next lesson we get to the people actually leaving. Well, one of the things they're going to be carrying, besides a lot of stuff given to them, they're going to be carrying a sarcophagus out with Joseph's embalmed body, bones, whatever's left of them in there. It may be a well-preserved mummy, because the Egyptians sure knew how to mummify things back then. Some obvious ones like Pharaoh. Easy answer. King of Egypt. What? Yeah, this is a lineage. Yep. So Pharaoh is not just one person, it's several people. It's kind of like king. So we don't know the name of this particular one, but the one at this time when we started out of Exodus did not remember Joseph, or did not believe what Joseph stood for, maybe. I perhaps didn't know them at all. I got midwives up here. Well, I got that up there. What did midwives do in our story so far? Kill who? Huh? They did not do it. Pharaoh's order to kill the firstborn children of Israel. So they defied the orders. Y'all remember what the excuse was? Yeah, they're strong. They were delivering before they could get there. So they would deliver their own children, and they'd be, instead of killing it, just coming out of the womb, they'd already have the baby up and out and probably hidden or carried off before the midwives could get there. All right? Now this one's... Well, we've a few little things about Moses so far. He was one of those babies. Got hit in a basket. Grew up. Killed an Egyptian. Pharaoh's daughter. Somebody else besides crazy demon. Got Pharaoh's daughter. Yeah. She's one that found Moses in the basket and raised him as her child. Did she actually care for Moses? Pharaoh's daughter found Moses. Moses' sister offered to find somebody to care for the child, which ended up being Moses' mother. And what Scott was pointing out, that Moses, of course, knew his Hebrew heritage, but he also was raised in the courts of Pharaoh, so he knew the Egyptian side of everything, too. Amram. Who's Amram? Moses' father, which makes his Jochebed, his mother, okay. Miriam. What? Moses' sister. We're not giving her name when she offers the daughter of Pharaoh, but we learn it later. Her name is Miriam. Reuel. Who's Reuel? Moses' father-in-law. Who's Zipporah? His wife? What was their heritage? Were they Egyptian? Or they weren't Egyptian or Hebrew, either one. They were Midianite. Okay? Jethro. Another name for Reuel. Yep. He was known by two names. Let's see, who else we got? Gershom. Who's Gershom? Okay. Son, Moses' son under Zipporah. Or Zipporah. Eliezer. Another son. Anybody struggling with some of these yet? Aaron. How's he came to Moses? Brother, he'll have a whole lot more to play into the story later on. Alright. Levi. Levi alive? No. But I brought Levi up because this is the tribe Moses and Aaron are from. And a lot of the story revolves around the Levites and others. One of the 12 tribes. Gershon, Kohath, and Merari. Why have I got these guys up here? Who are they? The brothers, sons of Levi, I want to get their names in front of you because they'll play into the story later on. So some more Korah. I don't know much about Korah. I told you one little thing about him. Who remembers what that was? He's kin to Moses, but he's not his brother. He's a cousin. He'll have more in the story later on. That's why I want y'all to have that name. Nadab and Abihu. Who's his father? Their father. Aaron. So they end up being priests. Eleazar is another son of Aaron. That's one him up there because something's going to happen to Nadab and Abihu later on. So Eleazar is going to be even more important. We got one more son named Ithamar. I just got him up there just to have him up there because I don't think we hear anything else about him. So we don't know what became of him in the Bible. But one of the sons of Aaron. And Phinehas, also, I'm going to put his name up there. He's the son of Eleazar. And that will be more important as we go through the story later on in the Bible story. I got elders up here. What elders am I talking about? What? Elders of Israel. Moses communicated with them. So they would be elders of the 12 tribes of Israel, right? So each tribe probably had an elder or two, some of the older men that Moses and Aaron dealt with, right? Instead of dealing with the whole group of people, they dealt with the elders, okay? Foreman. Well, we got foreman up here. What did foreman do in our story so far? Anybody? We talked about them. Yep, they were foremen of the bricklayers. Remember, Pharaoh made their task harder. He said, in response to Moses' request that they get to go out into the wilderness and worship. So, he said they wouldn't provide any more straw if we wanted to make the bricks, so they'd gather on the straw, but they had to keep their brick clothed the same, so the foreman went to Pharaoh, complained about it, and Pharaoh didn't much care about it. He said, get back to work, pretty much, and do what I told you to. Magicians. Well, we talked about magicians. Yep, they were Pharaoh's magicians, for one thing. They turned their staffs into snakes, like Moses did with the staff of the Lord, and did a few other things too. Remember some of the... Yep, good point. Yep. They finally come to the realization that what Moses was doing, they could, by their trickery or however they were doing it, they couldn't replicate it. And this, to me, it's pretty lame when he's copying what Moses was doing. It seemed like it had been much more powerful exhibited if they could undo what Moses or the Lord had done through Moses. So. Alright. I'm going to talk about a few places. Egypt. Of course, Egypt. The reason I brought up here, the same thing to think about is this is a superpower of the world at this time. This is like the strongest nation in the world. I mean, this is, Pharaoh is a man as far as worldly things are going. Concern, world power is concerned, and Egypt's the place to be as a nation. Pithom. Remember Pithom? I'll give you the other one too. And Ramesses. The cities built by the Hebrews for Pharaoh, supply cities. Okay? Now. River of Egypt, not the River of Egypt, that's another smaller creek, but it's the main river of Egypt. This is the lifeblood of Egypt. It's the main water supply for the whole country. It's really how they came to fame by this river. Midian. The Moses' father-in-law lived. That's where he fled. When he fled after killing the Egyptian, he fled to Midian. Midian is of the Sinai Peninsula. Midian is on the east side and across the Aqaba on the west side of, I guess that would be the Saudi Arabian Peninsula. So, okay. Horeb. Same as Sinai, Mount Sinai. It's a mountain in the Sinai Peninsula where that's where the burning bush was. Moses talked to the Lord, where Aaron came to meet him. When God talked to Aaron in Egypt, he sent him to meet Moses at Horeb or Mount Sinai. I kind of abbreviated this. Land of Canaanites, Hittites, people have to help me. Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites. You never remember them all. Where is this? Is this in Egypt? No, it's not in Egypt. Not in Sinai. It's where, it's the promised land. It's where God promised Abraham his people will inherit one day. It gets shortened. Even as you read through the Bible, it don't use all these names, but eventually it comes to be the land of Canaan, or Canaan land, Canaan's land. So. Goshen. Do I know? Land Pharaoh gave to Joseph for his people to live on. It was down in the delta of the Nile. So it'd be, since the Nile River runs from south to north, one of the few rivers that do that, by the way. It's fertile land, and it's where the Israelites lived while they was in Egypt. They were separated from the Egyptians, but they had no land to live in. Wilderness, and I put 3 days. Why did I put that? That's right. That's where they wanted to go worship God. They wanted to go out there and have sacrifices. Okay. All right. All right. We're in chapter 10. We've been through 9 of the plagues. Verses 27 and 28. After the last plague, which was darkness. Right? Lord hated hardened Pharaoh's heart. Pharaoh is pretty much infuriated by this time, so he tells Moses to get out of his sight and make sure that he doesn't see him again. If he did, he would die. He would kill Moses. And Moses says, just as you said, he would never appear before him again. So that's how we finish chapter 10. In chapter 11, verses 1 through 3, the Lord tells Moses that he has one more plague. So that would be the 10th one. After which Moses would drive Pharaoh would drive the Israelites out completely. So instead of letting them go, he's going to drive them out. So, which is something Moses don't understand right now. Well, he's just been asked to be let go. And hear the Lord saying he's going to drive you out. So. He says, tell men and women alike to ask Egyptian neighbors for gold and silver when this happens. And the Israelites were favored among the Egyptians. And Moses was highly regarded by the Egyptian officials and people. Of course, seeing all these plagues that have happened to them over this amount of time, of course they're highly regarded. They know that the God of the Israelites is a strong and powerful God. So, of course, they're favored. Yep. So, everybody sees, they're starting, well, practically everybody sees things Moses' way except one guy, and that is Pharaoh. His heart is so hard that he's not going to listen to anybody as far as what he does with these Israelites. But he has to listen to one person, that's God. Moses warns of death in verses 4 through 10. Moses, about midnight, the Lord will go throughout Egypt, so it's telling him what's going to happen. Every firstborn will die, including the son of Pharaoh, the son of the slave girl, the firstborn of the cattle, and that there will be loud wailing among Egypt, but among the Israelites, no problem. You only hear a dog bark. For the rest of Egypt, they could be crying out over the loss of the firstborn. It says, then you will know that God made a distinction between the Egyptians and Israel, that all the Pharaoh's officials will come to Moses bowing and telling the Israelites to leave. Moses is hot with anger, and he leaves Pharaoh. The Lord tells him that Pharaoh will not heed you. His wonders will be multiplied in Egypt, but Pharaoh hardened his heart still. So I take it when he left in chapter 10, when Moses said he wouldn't see Pharaoh again, that at this point he had probably been in Pharaoh's court, talked to the official who's giving word back to Pharaoh, is the way I take this. And he just leaves the court mad at Pharaoh because it's hard in his heart and we're not listening to the warning of death coming from Moses. In chapter 12, I got my scripture wrong. Instructions for Passover. This is given to Moses and Aaron, these instructions. He says, this month is now going to be the first month and the first of the year. So the Hebrews have a calendar start over with this month. On the 10th day of the month, each man was to take a lamb for his household, per household. If there's a small household that didn't have a lamb, they were to share with their neighbor. The amount of lamb that was, is supposed to be according to what was going to be eaten. Depending on how many neighbors you had to share with or whatever. This is the Jewish month Nisan, by the way, N-I-S-A-N, and it's about like our April. So that's about the time of year it is. They would take year-old males without defect from sheep or goats. They would care for them until the 14th day. So they take them on the 10th day, care for them until the 14th day. Then they were to slaughter them at twilight, which is just before dark, late in the evening. Take the blood and put on two posts and the lintel of the doorway where the lamb is eaten. This is the Passover sacrifice. The Hebrew word for that is Korban Pesach, P-E-S-A-K-H. You might have heard of the Paschal Lamb. You may have heard that phrase or seen that phrase. Well, that's, I think, a derivation of the Hebrew word Korban Pesach. Well, that's the Passover Lamb. If you see somebody talking about the Paschal Lamb, well, that's just the Passover Lamb. And if you see I know in Catholic churches, they have the images of a sheep that's carrying a real long cross. You know, the sheep will have a halo, and on the cross it'll have either a flag or a pennant with a red cross on a white background. Well, that's the Paschal Lamb, and it's just their representation of the Passover Lamb. So all that's Passover Lamb, Paschal Lamb, and that's just the symbolic thing about that. Instructions for the Passover the same night. They were to eat the meat roasted over fire. They were to cook it with bitter herbs. And they were to eat bread without leaven. They weren't to eat raw or boiled lamb. They cooked over the fire, roasted with its head, legs, and entrails. Leftovers were to be burned and not eaten in the morning. The way they were to eat it, they were to have their cloak tucked in their belt, so they'd gather up their cloak, tuck it in their belt, sandals on their feet, staff in their hand, eating this and eating it quick. And somebody eating like that, what? Why was they told to eat it that way, you think? Yep, be ready to go. Be ready to go. That same night, the Lord will pass through Egypt and strike down every firstborn, both men and women and animals. And he said, I will bring judgment on all the gods of Egypt. And the blood will be a sign for you on your house. When I see the blood, I will pass over you. Bringing judgment on all the gods of Egypt. So I want to use this as an opportunity to go over some of these previous plagues. One of the gods of Egypt was named Khnum. He was guardian of the river source. Another named Hapi, which was the spirit of the Nile. And Osiris, the Nile, was his bloodstream. So which plague did God show power over these gods, the Egyptian gods? The first one, which was turning all the bodies of the water to blood. Another god of Egypt was Hapi or Hekt. This was the frog goddess to Egypt, both related to fertility, these two gods. Old plague to God, so that he was in charge of all that. The frogs, land covered with frogs. Seb was the earth god of Egypt. Let's see, Seb. Which one do you think that one? It's the next one. Lice or gnats. Watchet was the fly god of Egypt. What's the next one? Flies everywhere. If Moses said this was going to happen, and it happened. He didn't ask Watchet for it. He said God would bring it. And brought flies, he did. So that shows his power over that one. Ptah, Menevis, Hathor, and Amun are Egyptian gods associated with bulls and cows. What plague? Yep, murine or diseased cattle. Death of livestock. Sekhmet was an Egyptian god of epidemics. Serapis and Imhotep were Egyptian gods of healing. Bulls and sores. Those gods couldn't help them. The Atmos. What plague? Hail. Serapia was Egyptian deity protector from the locusts. And the locust was the next plague. It's all consuming locust, ate everything green. Amon, Atum, Horus were all Egyptian sun gods, and Thoth was an Egyptian moon god. Darkness throughout the land. Remember, darkness, you couldn't see a hand in front of your face. You could feel it, except where was it not? Land of Goshen. That's right. And we're looking at the tenth from now, death of the firstborn. So you see all these gods of Egypt that are mentioned here, but God put out a plague that answered every one of them. One god. Now you see why Moses and the Israelites had so much respect from all the people, because Moses and the Lord had shown them that their God was the all-powerful God, and that none of the Egyptians' gods could answer for what the Lord Jehovah had done. So he did bring judgment on all the gods of Egypt. Besides the Passover happened then, it was an annual celebration, something they were to do every year as a memorial or commemorative celebration and festival, Lord. This would be a lasting ordinance. They would, for 7 days, they'd eat unleavened bread without yeast, and then they would remove the yeast from the house. And if someone was to eat yeast, it was to be cut off, so he wouldn't get to participate in the Passover celebration. On the first and seventh day, they had a sacred assembly. It was a week-long thing. No work these days except to prepare the bread on the first and seventh day. It's also known as the Feast of Unleavened Bread. And it's symbolic of the day Israel's divisions were brought out of Egypt. And it's on the 14th to the 21st day of the month. 14th being Passover, 15th that Feast of Unleavened Bread, and carry on to the 21st for the close Passover. If you're interested for 2015, if you want to mark it on your calendar, Passover begins on Friday, April the 3rd at evening, and ends the evening on Saturday, April 11th. Aliens and native-born Israelites may eat. The foreigner may not. Their slaves may eat if they were circumcised, but temporary residents and hired workers couldn't eat it. It was eaten inside their homes. They couldn't eat it outside. They would eat it inside their home. They were not to break any bones as they were preparing this. And no uncircumcised, even if he was an Israelite, there's no uncircumcised male may eat of it. Instructions are given, verses 21 through 28 of chapter 12. So if Moses summons elders, and they go out and select the lambs and slaughter, and they take a bunch of hyssop and dip it in blood and put it on the doorpost and lintel of the doorway. And I got a picture here just to show you. No one was to leave that house until in the morning. So this is actually the first Passover. When the Lord passes over, he will see the blood and not allow the destroyer to enter. And this is just a picture of it. Of course, the doorpost would be on the sides, and the lintels are heavy timber across the top. It was likely their homes were made out of the bricks they made, so they need a heavy piece of timber to support the weight over the doorway. So that's, and this is hyssop, picture of hyssop, a bunch of it, so they would dip that in the lamb's blood and hang it over the doorway. This would be a ceremony that would be observed when they first enter the promised land, so we'll look for that later on in the Bible story of them celebrating this Passover when they first entered the promised land. They were to be ready to answer the children's questions about the Passover celebration. So the people bowed down and worshiped and did just what the Lord commanded. So at midnight, and they prepared. God struck down the firstborn of Egypt, Pharaoh's son, the firstborn of prisoners and livestock. And Pharaoh's and officials awakened to loud wailing in Egypt. And there was not a house left in Egypt without someone dead in it. During the night, Pharaoh calls for Moses and Aaron. Middle of the night, says, "Up, leave my people, you and the Israelites. Go worship God and take your livestock." And then on the last plague, he was willing to let them go out into the wilderness to worship, but couldn't take their livestock. Now he's come to be gone, and he asked for a blessing from them also. Urge the Israelites to leave. The Egyptians give aid. They urge the Israelites to go, because the way things have been going, it's not looking good. And he just lost the oldest, firstborn, whatever in your household. And so they want them to get on out, or they all might be dead. The Israelites took up the dough before the yeast was added, and they'll carry it in their kneading bowls wrapped in their clothes. That's how fast they pack stuff up. They asked the Egyptians for gold and silver, and they're given what they are asked for. They want them to go so bad. And this is how they plunder Egypt. It wasn't like a conquering force. It was like, here, go and take this with you, just be gone. In chapter 13, we skip some in 12 because it's part of where they actually pack up and leave, and that's going to be covered in the next lesson. So that's why we're not covering that in this lesson. We're going to go on to chapter 12 and look briefly at the law of the firstborn. God demands firstborn. The Lord said to Moses, consecrate to me every firstborn male among the Israelites, whether man or animal. And if you skip on down to verse 11, we'll get some more information on that. After the Lord brings you into Canaan, remember I talked, there's shortened the Canaan's land, the land of Canaan, and gives it to you. He tells them you are to give over to the Lord the firstborn males of both animals and man. All firstborn males of livestock are the Lord's, so they were to be sacrificed. They could redeem the firstborn donkey with a lamb. If they couldn't, they were to break its neck. So, apparently God would let them keep their donkeys. I guess they were highly useful in traveling and stuff, if they could redeem it with a lamb. And they were to redeem every firstborn among your sons. So, of course, they didn't sacrifice their firstborn son, but they were redeemed. We'll learn more about that later on in the Bible story. Later, when your son asks you, what does it mean? He tells him, with a mighty hand, the Lord brought us out of Egypt, a land of slavery. Pharaoh stubbornly refused to let us go. The Lord killed every firstborn in Egypt, man and animal. This is why, when you're telling your sons that you sacrificed the firstborn animals and redeeming your firstborn son, and it's a sign on your hand and a symbol on your forehead or a frontlet between your eyes, some versions mention it. And that's what we're supposed to cover tonight. And I want to go back just a little bit. Well, get a songbook. Open to number 289. We'll use the last few minutes to look at this. 289. This is kind of how we started. We talked about Steve's lesson on Sunday morning and how tonight's class made that mean more to us. 289 is titled When I See the Blood. And it doesn't start out talking about Moses and the Exodus. It starts out talking about Christ, our Redeemer, dying on the cross. Died for the sinner. Then, on down the line, you'll see that, yes, he will pass over you. Now, who's he talking about there? Yes, he will pass over you. He's not talking about Jesus. He's talking about God. Yes. That's right. You read through there, it tells this last part of these four stanzas. The first part's talking about what Christ has done for you and him being the sacrificial lamb. And understand the story of the Passover and the lamb that was killed for the Passover. Christ is the sacrificial lamb in this song. And this last part of the stanzas is kind of saying that God will pass over you. And the chorus, you didn't know the story of the Passover and the Exodus, this chorus wouldn't make any sense. When I see the blood, I will pass over you. So when you sing this song next time, look back to what God did for Moses and the Israelites in offering, where they had to offer this Passover lamb and paint their doorposts and their lintels. Of their doorway and how he saved Israel in doing that, and they got their freedom from Egypt and their bondage. So, any questions or comments before we finish? Appreciate y'all.